Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Discover how you can take charge of the all-new Corsa E on opel.ie.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
As we've been hearing, ministers will today examine mandatory quarantine for people travelling into Ireland without proof of being COVID-free. They're also going to consider tighter north-south border COVID checks. Well, Dr. David Nabarro is the World Health Organization's special envoy on COVID-19 and is on the line now. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire. Good morning, listeners.
Thank you very much for joining us. There's a massive debate raging here, David, about mandatory quarantine, whether it should happen for everybody coming in to the country. Yeah. What is the World Health Organization's position on this?
I think we're recognising that each country around the world has to make decisions about how to minimise risk for people at a time when levels of virus seem to be surging in so many parts of the world, and it's proving to be hard to keep the numbers down. If we look at what's happened in Ireland as a result of really hard work, you've had an 18% reduction in incidence of COVID cases in the last 2 weeks. This is very good news. But it will all be made, unfortunately, more difficult if there's a lot of people with COVID who come into the country. So I can quite understand the wish by government to try to reduce the risk of new COVID cases coming into the countries. So this is understandable from our perspective, but we know it's also provoking heartache, particularly for those whose work requires them to travel overseas a lot.
So again, are you saying it is country by country you've got to assess how at risk you are?
Yes, it's all got to be done on risk, because each country now is in the midst of a very delicate process of trying to get the numbers down whilst at the same time trying to maintain as much economic activity as possible. Mm-hmm. And that means that the country has to look at other countries from their own risk profile. And for the time being, it has to be country by country, and it will change over time, which of course is very frustrating for everybody.
And there are people who would say, look, Ireland is an island. It is in a perfect position to have, if not zero COVID, then quite close to it if we control the borders here.
That's right. And that is serious, that right now, as you're really doing so well to get the numbers down, it's worthwhile looking at every possible way in which you can reduce risk. So I understand why the government is looking so hard at what happens at border crossing points and requires some form of proof that people are virus-free when they're trying to come into the country. Okay. I can understand.
Our Minister for Health occasionally cites Dr. Mike Ryan as someone who warns of the dangers of quarantine. So does the World Health Organization support countries who do decide to implement quarantine if they deem it necessary?
That's the point. We say it has to be a national decision based on an assessment of risk. Now, there's a particular issue here, which is, can you be sure that you're assessing risk fairly? And can you confirm to everybody that this decision is just made on the basis of risk? I think that we look very hard at the way in which Ireland is approaching this, and we see this being done in the right way. But I have to stress, it will not stay constant. This will mean that there'll be some shifting from time to time based on new information about risk. And that's why there will be some last-minute changes. The reason why people in WHO are nervous about border controls is just that we've seen how hard it is to keep a virus out at the borders, and we are very, very wary of adopting any position that says everybody should do this. We'd say you have to work it out for yourself.
But some countries have done really well when they have controlled their borders, haven't they?
But they've done other things as well, Claire. You see, it's borders is part of it, but also it's making certain that when new cases appear in your country, you can deal with them quickly. And that means putting people into isolation and also doing the contact tracing. That's the hard work that's at the heart of COVID control in any country. And we love to see it when all the different preventive measures are being put in place. What we would really try to encourage is you don't rely on any one measure like border control, keeping you safe. You've got to do everything. You've got to, at the same time, to be able to pick up cases in your country as they appear.
Mm-hmm. There's also an element of fairness here because we had one of our ministers in, the Minister for Transport, earlier, and we were talking to him about the people who have adhered to this rule in Ireland at the moment that you shouldn't travel more than 5k from your home. And yet the government tells us that most people who are coming into Dublin Airport have been on their holidays. They've been in Tenerife and other parts of Spain, Irish people.
Well, it's difficult, isn't it, for us to comment on this, because we don't want to be criticising decisions made by individuals. But I think most of us, myself included, have really taken a lot of trouble over the last few months to avoid putting ourselves and others at risk. And that's meant making really quite difficult decisions for our emotional lives. We've said we won't see our children or our grandchildren. We won't see our older relatives because we want to keep them safe. We can only do this effort to keep the COVID under control if we all follow the same rules. And I agree with you totally. Fairness matters in dealing with this particular virus.
I want to talk to you about the variants and the concern over the new variants, because I think people were very worried there in the last few days when the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said that there was new evidence that the new variant of coronavirus, which was first identified in the UK, the B117, that this might be linked to a higher death rate. What's the World Health Organization position on that?
We've seen and heard the remarks that were made at a UK press conference on Friday afternoon. Within the WHO, we're studying all the different variants that we know about very, very carefully, because we know that people want to understand whether or not they're more easily transmitted, lead to more suffering, and also whether they are perhaps resistant to the antibodies produced through the vaccines. As of now, we don't have anything to tell us, information other than they appear to be, in some cases, more transmissible. So this latest information on higher consequences, I have to tell you, is stuff that we just don't have the data, and we're waiting to receive it from our colleagues in the UK.
Okay.
Perhaps it's come through over the weekend.
On the transmissibility, though, given that it is easier to catch this now from other people, are you advising at the World Health Organization that people should wear masks outdoors, and are you advising that we ditch the old fabric masks and start wearing the surgical ones?
As of now, there has not been a change in WHO's guidance on mask wearing. I want to be clear on that. The people who are involved in providing this guidance look regularly, about three or four times a week, at the data that are coming through. We've heard that some countries are asking that folk move from cloth masks to surgical masks. We're actually asking the countries concerned to give us their evidence for suggesting that one mask type is better than the other mask type. We're just waiting to hear and to see. Right now, our guidance is unchanged.
OK, because we know the French government is recommending that people wear surgical masks, and Germany's gone further than that, hasn't it? Made it compulsory for people to wear the filtering face piece.
But each government is trying to work out how best to deal with the situation. I think we've all realised that the way you deal with these new variants is by practicing what we call the non-pharmaceutical precautions as fully as possible. But we don't have, at the moment, any reason to recommend a shift in mask types or mask wearing. Right now, we are reviewing all the time. And as I said just now, but I want to say it again, we've asked the countries that have recommended a different approach to give us all the information they can. We have to do this together. We all have to compare the different pieces of evidence we have. And we're trying to get as much standardisation as possible, particularly on the mask issue.
Do you wear your mask outside in the open air?
Yes, I do. I do. I wear it, but I'll tell you what, if I'm going out for exercise and I'm on my own in the middle of a field, I'm not wearing a mask. But if I'm going to the market in my local place here in France, I'm just outside Geneva, yes, I wear my mask, partly because it's mandated, but also because I feel safer. I don't like being up close to people without wearing my mask. even outdoors. And I'm really quite wary of this virus at the moment.
Okay, and because our own Taoiseach was saying that when he goes for a walk, he wears a mask, and we're wondering whether that is the advice now that we should all follow. But I think from what you're saying is, if you were advising us, it would be if we're going to crowded outside areas, we should be wearing a mask.
That's the point. We're trying all the time to stop this virus jumping from one person to the other. So if you're in a place where people are likely to be close together, for example, you're buying something from a market store, you should be wearing a mask. My big fuss is people should wear their masks properly. I don't like seeing masks below people's noses, and absolutely I don't like seeing them below people's chins unless they're eating or something. Really, if you're wearing a mask, make sure it covers nose and mouth properly.
Okay, and dispose of it properly when you're finished with
it. Oh, yes. I'm fed up with seeing so many masks sort of just chucked around on the floor. I don't think that's good practice, but perhaps that's something we all need to watch out for.
Okay, I'm sorry now to press you on what you're doing yourself, but I think people really want to know what the experts who
don't
are looking at all of the
at
evidence.
All.
Do you
at
wear
all.
The surgical version, the disposable version, or do you wear the fabric one?
I wear a fabric one, but it's three layers and it's really well fitting. And that's the part I'm concerned about. Recently, I've been going for tightly fitting around my nose. And if I'm worried about the degree of fit, I go straight to a surgical mask. Fitting is what matters. There's no point in having a mask if there's great gaps and air just comes straight out. So as you talk, it's going straight into somebody else's face.
Okay, and the metal strip across the nose is important.
I like the metal strip personally. I'm really keen on the metal strip across the nose. Probably because I've got a bit of a big nose. Yeah.
We have a question in from a listener who would like to know whether taking vitamin D, would that help reduce the risk of COVID? That's from Joe, who's listening. Now, we're going to be discussing this a little bit later on because there's a call from some medical experts here for the government to change advice on vitamin D. What do you say?
At the moment, I have seen nothing that suggests to me that I should be taking vitamin D, but I absolutely would not discourage anybody from taking it if they have reason to believe that it might work. And it's controversial. I've seen quite a lot of experts actually arguing for vitamin D. So something to keep an eye on. But right now, I don't think the evidence is strong.
OK, well, as I say, we'll be hearing more about that on this programme a little bit later. Now, on the AstraZeneca shortfall, it was great disappointment here because it impacts our rollout particularly. It's a big setback. How big a setback is it from your point of view?
Well, I think every country is trying to scale up vaccination, particularly to protect those most at risk. And whenever we hear of shortfalls in any company production, it's frustrating. But these shortfalls usually mean that there's some effort being made to improve the quality of production. Vaccine production is not straightforward. Sometimes you get batches that just are not good enough. So a shortfall usually has a good reason for it. And so whilst I understand people being disappointed, it's part of what happens when you're producing vaccines and everybody is rushing to get vaccine produced as quickly as possible. There will be batches or production lines that prove to be not working properly. We should accept that as part of the reality.
That will be the reality over the coming months, that we will have this break in supply.
There will be breaks in supply. There will be uncertainties about particular vaccines. There will be worries when you get two or three side effects reported in quick succession. This is the reality. We've all got to be ready for the fact that this won't be a perfect process. It'll have, frankly, snafus, and we have to live with that.
David, thank you, as always, for talking to us on the programme. David Nabarro there from the World Health Organization.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.